ृतादेवान् पितृन् यान्ति पितृवृताः भूतानि यान्ति भूतेजा यान्ति मद्याजिनोऽपि माम् यान्ति देववृता देवान् पितृन् यान्ति पितृवृताः भूतानि यान्ति भूतेजा यान्ति मद्याजिनोऽपि माम्
श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors. And those who worship me will live with me. Kindly repeat. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors. And those who worship me will live with me.
नमो विष्णु पादाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
We are continuing with our discussion on demigods. Last time we saw that the worship of demigods is avidhi purvakam, or it is not according to proper regulative principles. It is illegal. Let us briefly refresh our memories of some of the important points that were made in last Wednesday's discussion. So first question, who are the demigods? Who would like to answer? Who are the demigods? Representatives of God. What else? They are the agents of the Supreme Lord. What else? They are also devotees of the Lord. What else? They are empowered living entities. They are jivatmas. They are empowered. They have tremendous power. What else? They are limited in their powers because they are not supreme. They are representatives of the supreme, but they are themselves not supreme. Anything else? Then what about worship of the demigods? What has been said about worship of the demigods? Anyone remembers from last time? It is avidhi purvakam. Why? Why is it avidhi purvakam? Because it is actually meant for the Supreme Lord, but it is offered without true understanding of who the real recipient should be. We had given one very simple example to illustrate this point. People think that worshipping the demigods means worshipping the Supreme Lord. It is worshipping the Supreme Lord because the demigods are also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. But that is not the proper way to worship the Supreme Lord. Why? What is an example for that? We had given an example of a tree. Do you remember that? What was that example of the tree? So, could you elaborate on the example? Yes? Yes. 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 Yes, very correct. Very correct. So Krishna represents the root of the tree. And what do the demigods represent? The various branches. So when you water the branches, are you watering the tree or are you not watering the tree? But you are watering the tree, isn't it? You are pouring water on the tree. But it is not the proper way to water the tree. You are only watering a part of the tree. If you water the root, then automatically water will be transported everywhere in the tree. So you do not have to separately water the branches, the fruits, the leaves and the flowers and so on. So watering the branches is also watering the tree, but that is not the proper way to water the tree. Similarly, the demigods who are the parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, they are like branches. When you worship the demigods, because they are also part of the Supreme Lord, so that is also worship of the Lord, but that is not the proper way to worship the Supreme Lord. So therefore it is called Avidhi Purvakam, because it is not according to the proper regulation of the way in which we worship the Supreme Lord. Those who worship the demigods with the understanding that the demigods are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, then what happens? That worship is all right. And eventually that particular demigod will promote his devotee's consciousness to the consciousness of Krishna. So he will make him a devotee. But if you worship the demigod without consideration of his relationship with Krishna, then that is called Avidhi Purvakam, because you think he is supreme. So such worship is not recommended. It is incorrect. So therefore this was the sum and substance of what we discussed last time. The demigods are always to be considered eternal servants of the Lord. They are never directly the Lord. What to speak of demigods being superior to servants of the Lord, they are actually even inferior to the pure devotees of the Lord. We saw last time also by so many examples of how the pure devotees are actually more powerful than the demigods themselves. We saw that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, everyone else is his servant, and he makes them all dance, and they have to dance as he makes them dance. So all of us are dancing to his tune, directly or indirectly. The devotees are dancing to his tune directly, and they are blissful, and Krishna becomes blissful. The non-devotees, they don't want to dance to his tune, so they are forced to dance to the tune of Krishna's illusory energy, the Maya. Therefore, they are forced to dance a different tune. But that dance is like dancing with all kinds of broken pieces of glass and nails on the floor. So it is very painful to dance like that. But you have to dance. So either you dance for Krishna or you dance for Maya. So in this way, the devotees, they make Krishna dance. We saw the example of the gopi in Vrindavan. When Krishna appeared as a small child, they were clapping their hands and singing, and Krishna was dancing. So this is the power of bhakti or devotion. Therefore we should know that although the demigods are devotees, most of them are not pure devotees. And therefore they are a little attached to their own material positions. So therefore, worship of demigods is not recommended in the Shastra. So we are going to continue today and also for the next one or two sessions further on the same subject of worship of demigods, because it is a very important subject. So in this shloka we are being told that for different forms of worship, there are different destinations. This is very important. Different worship, different destination. It is not that whatever form you worship, any form of worship you do, you will reach the same destination. That is not possible. In fact, in the Isopanishad, there is a very wonderful shloka which explains this point. It says, Anyad evahu sambhavat, anyad ahur asambhavat, iti shushrumadhiranam yenastad vichachakshire. The meaning of the shloka is that by worshipping the Supreme Lord, who is the cause of all causes, one result is obtained, and by worshipping that which is not supreme, another result is obtained. All this is heard very clearly from the dhiras, the sober people, who have explained it very clearly. So what is the point being made in the shloka from the Isha Upanishad? The point is that all paths do not lead to the same goal. Very important point. If you worship the Supreme Lord, you get one result. If you worship anything else that is not supreme, you get another result, depending on what else that you are worshipping apart from the Lord. So therefore it is a very, very common misconception you find in most people. If they are following some spiritual practice, they say, after all, everything leads to the same goal. All paths are one. Ultimately the goal is one. But that is not true. Very clearly in this shloka of the Bhagavad Gita, in several other shlokas of the Gita, and also in several other places in the Vedic literatures, like the one that we quoted from the Ishapanishad, it is very clearly said that all forms of worship do not lead to the same goal. And we have to understand what is supreme and what is not supreme by hearing from the dhiras. We have to understand these subject matters from the dhira purushas, who are the sober people. Who are the sober people? Sober people are one who have controlled their senses, who have understood what is their real position. Who is the Supreme Lord? What is my position in respect to the Supreme Lord? And who are acting and living according to that knowledge. This is a dhira. Srila Rupa Goswami describes or defines what is the meaning of a dhira, a sober person. Vacho vegam manasah krodha vegam jivva vegam udar upastha vegam etan vegan yovishaheta dhiraha. First of all, he says, vacho vegam. You must be able to control the six urges of the body. Veg means urges. There are various urges. You are being impelled or pushed to perform so many activities on the basis of certain pushes and pulls within us. The first one is called vacho vegam. Vacho vegam means the push to want to speak, to keep on speaking more and more and more. People like to speak a lot. The second, vacho vegam manasaha, the pushes and pulls of the mind. The mind is always pushing and pulling, accepting, rejecting, sankalpaha, vikalpaha. Sometimes the mind likes something, sometimes the mind dislikes that very thing, the very next moment perhaps. So we have to control the pushes and pulls of the mind. Then there is krodha vegam, the tendency to get angry when your sense gratification is interfered with. So this is krodha vegam. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jihva vegam. Jihva vegam means the urges of the tongue. The tongue has two functions. One is to speak unlimitedly, and the other is to taste palatable, nice, tasty dishes. So we have already discussed the phenomenon of wanting to speak unlimitedly. What about the tendency to taste nice foodstuffs? That is jihva vegam. So the tongue is always hankering to taste nice foodstuffs. So one must control that. Jihva vegam, udara vegam. Udara means the tendency to want to eat unlimited quantities of food. Although you are full, but you want to eat more and more and more. That is udara vegam. And upastha vegam. Upastha vegam means the pushes and pulls of the genitals, the sexual desires within us, which are prompting us to do all kinds of activities. So one must learn to control the sexual urges also. So one who has controlled these six desires, these six pushes and pulls, Shadvegam, the six kinds of pulls, he is called a dhira. Etan vishaheta. Etan vegan yo vishaheta dhiraha. All these vegas, one who is able to control vishaheta, he is called the dhira. And therefore, sarvam apimam prithvim sashishyat. Such a person is qualified to make disciples all over the world. In other words, he is in the position of a bona fide spiritual master or a guru. So one must understand these subject matters of who to worship, who not to worship, from a parampara of dhiras. In other words, there must be a guru shishya parampara coming from the Supreme Lord. And that parampara must be a parampara of such dhira purushas. It must not be simply a parampara of family tradition. Because I've heard something in my family, therefore I will follow it. Because certain ancestors followed a particular form of worship, therefore I will follow it. It is not necessary that because something is coming in the line of our family tradition, that it is necessarily true. It may be true or it may not be true. But the idea is that it is a risk. Unless we check with the parampara of dhir purushas, we will not know whether what we are doing, the forms of worship that we are doing, are legitimate or not legitimate according to the shastra. Therefore, we must be very clear in our minds about the process of worship. Usually, when people say all paths lead to the same goal, first of all, they are not even clear about what is the goal. People have hazy conceptions about what is the goal. Someone thinks this is the goal, someone thinks that is the goal. But here it is said in the Isopanishad, Yena stad vicha chakshire, the Dhir Purushas, they explain this subject matter very clearly, without any ambiguity, without any contradiction, so that you can easily and clearly understand what is the goal and what is the way to achieve the goal. So no confusion. It must be very clear. But generally, people who propagate this idea that all paths lead to the same goal, all gods are one, it's all the same, such people are themselves confused. They're not very clear. So we must hear from the Dhiras who will make it clear for us. So it is very important to understand, therefore, who is supreme and who is not supreme. For people who have this philosophy of all paths are one, we can actually we can understand this point by a very simple example. Even a very common man understands that when he goes to the railway station, it is not that he can just go to a ticket counter, purchase any ticket at random, and then sit in any train at random with that ticket and expect to reach a particular destination that he wants to go to. Is it possible? Suppose you want to go to Delhi, and you go to Bombay Central Railway Station, go to the counter, tell him, give me any ticket you like. You don't have the correct money. You don't even know how much money it costs to go to Delhi. You give some money, whatever ticket he wants to give you, you take. You don't even know what destination that is mentioned there. So you go to you buy some ticket, and then whatever train is available there on the platform, when you buy the ticket, you just sit in that. So, are you going to reach Delhi? You may, you just may, but what is the probability? It's a big risk. So therefore, we should know that all destinations, that all paths don't go to the same destination. You have to first of all know exactly where you want to go. You have to know where exact, how much price you have to pay for the ticket, and you have to know on which train you have to sit. The Vedas, they are like the ticket counter. When you go to the ticket counter, you can say there is a bona fide counter. You know, it's the authorized Indian Railways counter. If you go to any other counter, there are so many touts. If you go to the railway station, somebody sitting on some table and selling some tickets, saying this is Indian Railway ticket for Rajdhani Express, then you may get cheated. Very likely you will be cheated. And it's an offense. And if you're caught, then you'll be fined, maybe jailed. So similarly, if at all you want to know how to worship, whom to worship, in what way to worship, then you must only refer to the Vedic literatures or some bona fide scripture. Not that you just refer to any book written by any ordinary human being, or not that you simply imagine for yourself what you want to worship and how you want to worship. No. So first of all, you must go to a bona fide ticket counter of the Indian Railways. In other words, you must only refer to Shastra and nothing, no other source except the Shastra. And once you have attained, go to the Shastra. It's like any other ticket counter where you can buy tickets for so many destinations. Delhi, Jabalpur, Calcutta, Ahmedabad, Madras, anywhere you can go. The ticket counter, the clerk will not say, why are you going to Delhi? You should go only to Jabalpur. No. Okay, you want this? Okay, you give me the money and you can go. Similarly, Vedas are telling you, what destination do you want to go to? Different destinations are available. Different planetary systems are available here. You want to go to the Devata's planet? Okay, here is the price you have to pay. Come on, take the ticket. You want to go to the planets of the Pishachas and the Ghosts? Alright, here is the ticket. This is what you have to do and this is how much you have to pay. You want to go to the planets of the Pitris of the ancestors? Here is what you have to do. And okay, the best place to go to is Krishna's abode. But you don't want to listen, so here it is. If you want to go to Krishna's abode, this is also the way and this is the price you have to pay. Sarva dharman parityajya, mamekam sharanam raja. That's the price you have to pay. So, the Veda is like a ticket counter. Whatever you like, they're fulfilling your desires. Wherever you want to go, you can go. Just buy the correct ticket from the proper counter and go. Only thing is, an intelligent person should try to understand which is the right destination to go to. But the point is at this time that there are different destinations. We have seen it is very important to understand what is supreme and not supreme. Our destination should be to approach the supreme, that which is supreme. And all other destinations, whatever they may be, will not lead us to that goal. So we have to be clear. Now, an intelligent person seeks out. Although there are many options and many destinations available in the Vedas, I must seek out that destination which leads me to the supreme goal. So who is that supreme person? How to understand? The greatest is the supreme. Once there was an individual, one man, he had a desire in his mind that he wanted to serve the greatest person. So he had a desire to serve. So he took up a master and he began to serve him. Then he found that this master was taking advice from the Gram Panchayat head. So then he said, why are you going to him for advice? Is he greater than you? So he said, yes, he is the chief of the whole village, so I'm going to him. So then I will serve him because I want to serve the greatest. He said, all right, you serve him. So he went and took up employment with the Gram Panchayat chief. Then he saw that the Gram Panchayat chief, every Sunday he was going somewhere. Then one day he asked him, my dear sir, where are you going every Sunday? He says, I'm going to the Talukdar, the chief of the Taluka. So is he greater than you? He says, yes. So I would also like to worship him, serve him, because I want to serve the greatest. He says, okay. So he went to the Talukdar and he began to serve. And he found the Talukdar every Sunday was going somewhere else. He was going. So he asked him, where are you going every Sunday? He said, I'm going to the head of the Zilla Parishad, the head of the district. So I would like to serve him. Is he greater than you? Yes. Then he went and served him. And then he found the Zilla Parishad chief was going to meet the Viceroy. And then he served under the Viceroy. And he found that the Viceroy was going to meet the King. So in this way, eventually he landed up at the palace of the King. And he said, you are the greatest person in the land, and I would like to serve under you. So the King said, all right. And he gave him employment. But then he found that every morning the King is going somewhere. So he followed him. Where is he going? And he saw that he's going to a small little building, and inside the building there were some what he thought was statues. And this King was going and he was falling flat on the ground, and he was shocked. He thought, the King of the land falling flat on the ground like this, folding his hands, what is all this? So when the King came back, he asked him, why are you doing this? You are the King of the land, so why are you falling flat on the ground and doing all these things? He said, I'm worshipping the Supreme Lord. So he said, you mean there is someone superior to you? He said, yes, he is the source of everything. So he said, I have had enough. Finally tell me once and for all, is there anyone superior to him also or not? He said, no, he is the Supreme Lord of all. There's no one who is superior to him. So then finally, he became a devotee of the Lord. In this way, the Shastras say, the intelligent person must try to seek out who is the Supreme. And we must understand who is the Supreme only from the parampara of Dhiras. Krishna says very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita, Mattaha paratram nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya mai sarvamidam protam sutre maniganaiva. He says that there is no truth in this creation superior to me. I am the supreme absolute truth. There is nothing superior to me. And everything else is dependent on me. Everything else is dependent on me and hanging upon me like pearls are hanging on a thread. We have discussed this subject very elaborately about 5-6 months ago when we were discussing the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. How and why we say that He is the Supreme. So Krishna says, just like pearls are strung on a thread, everything is resting upon Him and His energies. Therefore He is the Supreme Absolute Truth. Arjuna also declares, Param Brahmam Param Dhamam Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum. He says, my dear Krishna, you are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Abode, the Supreme Pure. You are the original person. You are divine, eternal, transcendental. So in this way, all through the Shastra, we find very clear references to the fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, any intelligent person must take to his worship. Krishna explains very clearly, knowing somebody to be greater than you means that you must serve him. And knowing somebody to be the greatest means you must serve him with all your heart and soul, and you must surrender to him. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna says, I am the source of all the material and all the spiritual worlds. Everything is coming from me. Therefore, an intelligent man who knows this, what does he do? He surrenders to me. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Such a person is called a Buddha. Buddha means an intelligent person who simply becomes his devotee after knowing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So naturally, one must become devotees of Krishna. One must serve him. One must worship him. But then, if you worship Krishna, you will reach Krishna's abode and never come back to this material world. Yad gatvana nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. But if you don't worship Krishna, then what happens? Then, it's like saying, you want to go to Delhi, and if you don't buy a ticket for Delhi, then what happens? then so many options, isn't it? You can buy a ticket to Calcutta, you can buy a ticket to Madras, here, there, unlimited destinations are possible. Correct? Similarly, if you worship Krishna, you will go to Krishna. So very clearly in the last line of the shloka, Krishna says, Yanti madhyajinopi mam. Yajinaha means Krishna's devotees. Madhyajinaha means Krishna's devotees. So Krishna says very clearly that my devotees will come to me. And what about those who are not Krishna's devotees? Where will they go? So many different places are possible. The sinful people, Krishna says in the Gita, they have to take birth in the lower planets, in the hellish planets, and suffer the reactions of their sinful activities. Some of them may take birth in the lower species of life, like the cats and the dogs. Some of them may remain in the material, in this earthly planet, and they will take birth in different species of life for those who are in Rajaguna. Those who are in Tamaguna go down. Those who are in Rajaguna stay here in this earthly planet and take birth. And those who have different forms of worship, who are more or less in Sattvaguna, some of them may also be in Rajaguna and Tamaguna, but according to the nature of their worship, they will go to the other planets. So in this shloka, Lord Krishna is giving three examples of three different destinations that are possible for those who are not worshippers of Krishna. The first one is Yanti Deva Vrita Devan. That means the devotees of the demigods will go to the abodes of the demigods. Now we have seen earlier also that in this material world there are many planetary systems. There are specifically 14 levels of planetary systems in each universe. 7 above and 6 below us. We are in the middle. The earthly planetary system is in the middle. And below there are 7 and above there are 7 if you count Earth in the 7. So in this way we see that the devatas, they live in some of the higher planetary systems. And those abodes, because they are accessible and available only to those who have performed punya or pious activities, they are called Surendra Lokam. Surendra Lokam means the abodes of Indra and the great demigods. It is only when one is qualified suitably by performing pious activities that one can attain to those planets. And what are those planets? In the Bhagavad Gita itself, just a few shlokas before this one, Lord Krishna calls this the planet of godly delights, Deva Bhogan. Deva Bhogan means where material enjoyment that is available is tremendously high compared to this earthly planet. And the devatas, they are there drinking somaras and other things. All this is described even in Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, somaras is a kind of a beverage. It's a kind of a liquor. But it is not a liquor of the kind that is drunk by ordinary people of this world. The ordinary liquor that is drunk by people of this world is intoxicating. It drives a person greater and greater into forgetfulness of God. He goes into illusion. And because he goes into illusion, he performs all kinds of horrible activities, abominable activities. A person becomes like an animal in a state of intoxication. So this state of intoxication, this world, drives one towards sinful activities. But the somaras that is drunk in the higher planets, that is also liquor, but that does not cause an intoxicating effect. It does not cause us to perform sinful activity. On the contrary, it frees us from sinful activity. So the devatas, especially in the moon planet, the somaras, the predominating deity of the moon or Chandra is called Soma. So somaras is being drunk by these people unlimitedly, and they derive a lot of material pleasure, deva bhogan, by drinking somaras. So in this way you find there are such pleasures available in the devatas' planets. Tremendous pleasures. We will see next time, however, how these pleasures are also limited. But nevertheless, these pleasures are available only to those people who have performed punya or pious activities and those people who have worshipped the demigods. So Krishna is saying that if you worship these devatas and demigods, then you will attain to their planets and then you will also be able to enjoy like them. So if that is what you want in life, so be it. Here are facilities. In the Vedas, I have given so many different methods by which you can go there and enjoy all these wonderful, so-called wonderful material pleasures. So this is for those who are worshippers of demigods. So it is very popular in India to find this, that people are worshipping various demigods. And they say it's all the same. Whichever demigod I worship, after all, planets. If you buy, let us say you want to go by Rajdhani Express from Bombay to Delhi. Rajdhani Express, where does it stop in the middle? Surat? Or Baroda? Baroda. Now, if you buy a ticket for Rajdhani Express from Bombay to Baroda, can you continue to sit in the train when the train goes from Baroda to Delhi? You can't. Because your ticket is only up to Baroda, so you must get down at Baroda. Similarly, in your destination, if you have purchased a ticket for the Surendra Lokam, for the Devata's planets, then you will go only up to there. You cannot go further beyond this material world to Krishna's abode, to the spiritual world, to the kingdom of God. That is beyond. You cannot go there. Then you will be considered a ticketless traveler and you will be asked to leave the train. So you cannot go from beyond the Devata's lokas to Krishna loka unless you have the requisite ticket. So like that, the devotees of the demigods, at most, they can go up to the Devata's planets and then they will come back. But they cannot get out of the cycle of birth and death. In other words, if you worship Krishna, and only if you worship Krishna, you can get out of this material world beyond the cycle of birth and death. That is the only way you can reach Krishna's abode, the spiritual world. And if you worship anything apart from Krishna, you will not be released from the cycle of birth and death. You will have to rotate in this wheel of samsara. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Compulsorily you will have to stay here. Whatever else apart from Krishna you worship. It means that you are worshipping very exalted devatas. It doesn't matter. Because worshipping the supreme has one result, worshipping that which is supreme has another result. So that is as far as the devatas are concerned. Then what is the second destination? Pitri nyanti pitri vrataha. Now, pitri means the forefathers, the ancestors. And it is very common to find that in the Karma Kanda, there is stipulation for performing pinda. Pindadan to the forefathers and to the ancestors. So when you give pindadan, you are actually giving some service to your forefathers. In this world, when we come, we are indebted to many people, even to our forefathers, because without them we wouldn't be here. So, therefore one performs pinda. And there are certain oblations and so many ceremonies to be performed. So because of that, the forefathers become liberated from whatever sinful activities they may knowingly or unknowingly have performed. So to the extent one is regularly doing pinda, that is helping the forefathers, wherever they are. Now you see, that is the reason people want to have a son. You may be wondering, why in the Indian culture, people want to have son? Why this obsession with having a son? Recently, there has been a spate of kinds of operations performed, where they try to detect whether it's a boy or a girl that is going to be born. And if it is a girl, then many, many couples, they have performed what is called amniocentesis. I think some medical people are there, they may know more about this. Where, having detected by some clinical test whether it's a girl or a boy, they kill the girl because they don't want to have the girl as a child. Because then dowry problems, so many problems. And moreover, the problem that who will do pinda when I die, who will carry on my generation. So the putra, the meaning of the word putra, comes from pu and thra. There is a hellish planet by the name of pu. Thra means to release from. So putra means one who is supposed to actually liberate you from the hellish planets. So he has to perform pindadan after you have died, perform shraddha, pinda and so on, and then he will liberate you, wherever you are, from whatever sins you may have performed. So this mentality is actually not good. It means that I will sin, then my sons, my generation, descendants will come and liberate me from that. So it is not a very nice mentality. But nevertheless, because unless one is a pure devotee of Krishna, one must always be committing some sinful activity or the other, so it is natural that we will commit some sin. So we want somebody who can release us from that. So mind you, this process doesn't help us to go back to the abode of Krishna. It doesn't help us to get out of the cycle of birth and death. It only helps us to get some temporary relief from the reactions of our sins. That's all. But nevertheless, we want at least that. So we want a putra. So therefore, people say, I want a son. And to get a son, therefore, you have to perform some punya. Without performing punya, you cannot even get a son. There is a story in this regard in the Mahabharata about King Dhritarashtra. You see, King Dhritarashtra, once upon a time, in one earlier life, much earlier life, he had killed the 100 baby birds of one female bird. He was a hunter, he was hunting. And in the course of hunting, he had killed these 100 baby birds. And so, as a result of his karma, what was to happen? He was to get his 100 children killed. Right? But to get your 100 sons killed, you first of all have to have 100 sons, isn't it? And even to get one son, you have to have some punya. So to get 100 sons, you must have so much punya accumulated. But at that time, in that lifetime, Dhritarashtra did not have so much punya or pious activities accumulated. So therefore, he had to wait for 50 lifetimes. In those 50 lifetimes, were generating various kinds of punya. The stock of punya in his bank account was accumulating. And after 50 lifetimes, when he had enough punya to get 100 sons, then he got the 100 sons in the next life. But then, that curse, that pap that he had done 50 lives ago, that also applied now. You see, law of karma means it doesn't mutually subtract. For whatever sins you do, you must suffer. For whatever pious activities you do, you must enjoy the results of that. It does not compensate. You cannot cancel one against the other. So because of his pious activities of over 50 lifetimes, he got 100 sons. But because he had killed those 100 birds in that earlier lifetime, so he was destined to have all his 100 sons killed while he was still living. It is considered a sign of some sinful activity in the past life to have your child killed before you die. Generally, the system is that you have to die before your children die. But if you die before, then it means that there is some karma from the previous life, some sinful activity. So anyway, the point is that to get a putra or a son, so much punya has to be done. Why? Why so much punya? Because such a putra can do pinda and he can liberate you. Even your ancestors, your generations, descendants can do that. And therefore it is said in the Shastra that a putra who doesn't perform pinda, who doesn't perform all these things, is no better than mutra. Mutra means urine. Putra and mutra in the Shastra, it is said, they come from the same place. So if a putra is not qualified enough to liberate his forefathers, then he's as good as mutra, which means he's worthless. So that is why people are hankering for a son. But however, we know from the devotional point of view, a devotee is least concerned with these things. Now, having said all these things, one must hasten to clarify that a devotee is beyond all these things. Why? A devotee is free from sin. Therefore, he doesn't need anyone to come after him to help him to get free from his sinful reactions. Because he has surrendered everything to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami mashuchah. I will save you from sinful reactions, do not fear. So he is depending on Krishna to be free from sin. He is not dependent on his husband and wife and sons and grandsons and great grandsons and so on and so forth. He is dependent on Krishna. And because he is Krishna's devotee, so Krishna frees him from all sinful reactions. That's number one. Number two, the devotee, because he is a worshipper of Krishna, he is freed from all other obligation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a shloka. Devarishi bhutapta nirnam pitranam na kinkaro nayam rinicha rajan. It means, for a person who is a devotee of the Supreme Lord, who is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, there are many, many debts and obligations we have. Deva, Rishi, Bhuta, Apta, Ninam, Pitrinam. Six kind of debts that you have when you come into this world. What is that? Number one, Deva. We are indebted to the Devatas because they are supplying us rain, sunshine, heat, everything. Whatever natural things are under the superintendence of the demigods who are servants of Krishna. So we are indebted to the demigods. When at the moment you are born, you are indebted. So that is the first kind of debt. Rishi, we are indebted to all the great sages of the past who have given us so much of wonderful wisdom of how we should live in this world. Devarishi Bhuta. Bhuta means we are indebted to all the other living entities, people at large, because we need other people. You cannot live alone. And you are receiving so many things from so many different people. So we are indebted to the people at large. Devarishi Bhuta Apta. Apta means your relatives and friends. You are indebted to your relatives, your mother, father, brother, sister, children, grandparents. You are indebted to all of them because they have done so much for you. And Pitrinam. We are also indebted to the Pitris or the forefathers, because without them, we would not be here. But a person who is a devotee of Krishna, a person who has understood that I have to surrender my life to Krishna, for such a person, na kinkaro na rinicha rajan. He is never to consider himself the servant of any one of these six categories. Of course, the devotee considers himself servant of all. But nevertheless, he is not obliged to any of these six. Na rinicha rajan. So no more rin, no more debt to such a devotee of Krishna. Therefore, for such a person, It is said, Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Parihitya Kartam. For a person who has given everything to Krishna, he is free from all obligations. Therefore, he is obliged, no longer obliged to perform pinda, no longer obliged to offer oblations to the forefathers. In fact, Prahlad says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that for one who becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, 10 generations on either side are liberated simply by the fact that he has become Krishna's pure devotee. That's all. So even among devotees, actually, it is not necessary to do pinda. If one simply becomes, whether son or daughter doesn't matter from the devotional viewpoint. From the point of view of bhakti, it doesn't matter because bhakti is beyond punya and pap. So even if you don't have a son or if you have no child, no problem. You have no problem in becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. This is the grace of Krishna. This is how wonderful bhakti is. Bhakti does not depend on what punya or pap you have done in the past. Because bhakti is a transcendental activity. Therefore, simply by becoming Krishna's devotee, you become beyond pap and punya, and therefore you're no longer obliged to all these other mundane restrictions. So daughter or son, anyone, no problem. Father, mother, everyone can get liberated if you simply become Krishna's pure devotee. This is the wonderful thing. So in any way, if one is worshipping the Pitris, if one has not proper understanding of Krishna consciousness, and one is doing pinda, and one must do that if one is not a devotee, it doesn't mean that one will not worship Krishna also and one will not worship the Pitris also. We should not do both. If you're not Krishna's devotee, at least you do that. At least don't commit sin. At least do something pious. So then people offer oblations. So for such people who are very devout to their parents, their grandparents and to the forefathers who are regularly offering pinda, there is one destination. What is that? That is called Pitriloka. So you can go to the planet called Pitriloka and enjoy. Because you have performed so much service to your forefathers. And there you can enjoy, and you will also rest assured that your descendants will also offer you pinda, because you have done that good karma. But nevertheless, you will not attain Krishna. Very often people complain that worship of parents or worship of family or worship of grandparents, that is worship of God. Where does Krishna say like that? Krishna says, worship of forefathers and worship of family, you'll go to Pitriloka. If you worship me, you will come to me. It is not the same. Very often, they give the example of Pundarik. That Pundarik, he worshipped his parents when, in fact, he wanted to worship Krishna, and Krishna told him, you go and worship your parents. So he went and worshipped his parents. And then when Krishna came, he actually neglected him. And so, we have the temple at Pandharpur, the Vithal deity at Pandharpur. But we must know two things here. One, we are not saying that we should not serve the parents, first of all, or the family. We should. But such service must be linked to the understanding that they are also parts and parcels of Krishna. And my goal in life is to make them devotees also. We must serve them with that consciousness. Not simply that they are my mother and father, my brother, sister, husband, wife. In so many lifetimes, we had so many husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, sisters. We have served all of them. Have we attained perfection simply because we served our family? So service to family may be done, but it must be done in the proper consciousness that they are also Krishna. They are not mine. They are also Krishna's property. And I must look after them nicely as a trustee on behalf of Krishna. And I must also make them Krishna's devotees. I must give them the real welfare, the real benefit, and send them to Krishna's abode. In that consciousness, the family should be worshipped. Secondly, as far as Pundarik was concerned, Krishna personally came and told him that you must worship. So if Krishna personally comes and tells us, then we can also do. And third, Pundarik's parents were great devotees of the Lord. They were not ordinary people. So therefore, serving the parents was also service to Krishna, because he was serving Krishna's devotees. And in the Shastra it is said that if you are serving Krishna's devotees, you are serving Krishna in a better way. So for all these reasons, we should know that simply worshipping forefathers and relatives and family members will not help us. It will take us to a separate destination. And finally, Krishna says a third destination. Bhutani yanti bhutejya. Those who worship bhut. Bhut means ghosts. Ghosts, spirits. They will attain a different destination. They also have their own planets. Now there are various ghostly beings in this universe also. The various ghostly beings are called yakshas, rakshasas, pishachas, and so on and so forth. Everyone probably has some experience of either directly or you've heard of somebody else having an experience with some ghosts or so on and so forth. Especially children. Children are very fond of narrating all these stories of ghosts and so on and so forth. So it is a fact that there are ghosts. And these ghosts, they reside in the planets, the upper planetary systems, where they have their own kind of lifestyle. The yakshas, they are basically mysterious spirits that roam around in fields and forests. The rakshasas, they are also demoniac spirits who wander at night, and sometimes they take up the form of a dog or an owl or a vulture or a dwarf, and they roam around like that. And then there are the pishachas. The pishachas are also demoniac spirits, and these pishachas, they eat flesh, they possess people's bodies, they also haunt various crematorium grounds, and they associate with other similar pishachas and ghostly bodies. So you have heard of so many cases of people being possessed, isn't it? So usually it is the pishachas who possess, they are evil spirits who possess in this way. So there are people who perform various kinds of black magic, tantra, isn't it? You have heard of such worship? But such worship is in the mode of ignorance. It is not proper worship. That is not to be considered real worship. And we should not think by worshipping like this, we will attain to Krishna's abode. That is not possible. If you worship in the Bhuta, Preta, Pishacha, Rakshasa, Yakshas, then you will attain to their abode and we will also become like them. So we will also become Pishacha in our next life, Rakshasa, whatever you want. And we can also drink blood, we can also eat flesh. So therefore you see the people who are worshipping like this, they are very much steeped in the mode of ignorance. And they perform very, very horrible tapasyas. Very, very ghastly kinds of forms of worship they have. You may have seen, especially some of the tantrics, they do very ghastly forms of worship. So they will go to such abodes. But the form of worship that takes us to Krishna's abode is very sublime. Very much not only in the mode of goodness, but transcendental to the mode of goodness. And that is bhakti. So by worshipping Krishna by this sublime process, we go to Krishna's abode. So if you worship all these other living entities, then you will go either to the devatas' planets, or you will go to the planets of the forefathers, or you will go to the planet of the yakshas, pishachas and so on. So if you want to go to Krishna's abode and get free from the cycle of birth and death, then the sublime process for this Kali Yuga is Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So in Kali Yuga, the principal process for worshipping Krishna is to chant His holy names regularly, every day. Just see, sometimes the worship of the devatas, they are so much strong, they are so dedicated in their worship of devatas. They are very obstinate. So we should be similarly obstinate in our worship of Krishna. We should be very regular, we should be very disciplined, and then we are guaranteed that we will reach Krishna's abode. So, the chanting of Krishna's names is the prescribed process in this age. And along with chanting of Krishna's names, we must know that association of devotees is of paramount importance. Without being with Krishna's devotees, we cannot chant Krishna's names. So, regular satsang is of utmost importance. So, kindly do try to come for satsang as much as possible. As much as possible means, as much as possible. Not that whenever I find time. In other words, as much as possible means that you have to find time. You have to create time. If you are so determined to come to the association of Krishna's devotees, then very easily you will be able to chant Krishna's names. You will be able to meditate upon His name. The third thing is to read the Shastra. Srila Prabhupada has written so many wonderful books that explain the science of Krishna consciousness to us in very simple language. In a very lucid way. Way that we can all understand and appreciate. So we should all try to read these books. There is a library available downstairs. You can become member and borrow books free of cost. You can either purchase some books as you like. But whatever it may be, please try to read these books. They are so wonderful. You will really get a taste of spiritual life if you just immerse yourself in these books. Getting strong conviction philosophically is very important. It is very important to come and hear lectures. That must be done. But you must also supplement these lectures by reading the books. There are also so many cassettes available in the library. Kindly do take them, borrow them, hear them. And also you can progress in this way. And offer all your foodstuffs to Krishna, not to the devatas. Offer foodstuffs to Krishna. When you offer foodstuffs to Krishna, as you said in the beginning, because Krishna is like the stomach, when you feed the foodstuffs to the stomach, all the parts of the body are nourished. Similarly, when you feed Krishna prasad, automatically all the devatas are satisfied. In fact, if at all you want to worship the demigods, You should feed them not directly. You should not give them bhoga. What is bhoga and prasad? Bhoga means food that is not offered. And prasad means bhoga that has already been offered to Krishna and accepted by Krishna. So you should not offer bhoga to the demigods. You should offer Krishna's prasad to the demigods. Then they will be happy. Because after all, demigods are also his devotees. Devotees like to accept prasad, isn't it? So when you give Krishna's prasad to the demigods, then that is very good. That is perfect. So in this way, you offer your bhoga to Krishna. Whatever you cook in the house, try to make it free from onion and garlic. Because onion and garlic are in the modes of passion. They agitate the mind. They cannot give you peace of mind. They cannot bring you in the mode of goodness. Unless you're in the mode of goodness, you cannot worship Krishna. You can worship the devatas, you can worship the pitris, you can worship the bhutas and pretas. But to come to Krishna, you have to be pure. To become pure, not only must you give up meat, fish, eggs and all these things, but you must also try to give up all other forms of foods that are very passionate, passion producing. Onion, garlic, all forms of very spicy foods. These things also should be given up because they are not good for our Krishna consciousness. So pure sattvic vegetarian food offer to Krishna and accept and feed your family, feed your friends and go back to Krishna's abode. And then side by side, please try to follow these four regulative principles. No meat eating, that is no non-vegetarian foodstuffs, no gambling of any kind, including speculation on the stock market and taking all kinds of speculative risky business deals, no indulging in illicit sexual activities, and fourth one, no intoxication of any kind. So if you follow these various do's and don'ts, worship of Krishna will become very easy. And at the end of life, very assuredly, Krishna guarantees you will reach Krishna's abode. That is where we want to go. That is our destination. It is a clear goal. Not like the confused goal that most people in the world have. We may go here also, there also. No. Our destination is very clear. We want to go to Krishna's abode. And our process is also very clear. Chant Hare Krishna and go to Krishna's abode. Hare Krishna. So we will now have darshan and kirtan. And after the kirtan and darshan, we will have a brief question-answer session. That was very blissful, wasn't it? So that is the power of chanting the holy name in the association of devotees. And that is the power of Krishna's bhakti. So we'll have some question answers if somebody has any questions. Yes? Hare Krishna.
We know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality. And we also know that we must take to the worship of Krishna. But you know that we have been brought up by the elders at home all these years to worship demigods, saying that all gods are the same, you know. And now that a person comes to know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality, and now that he wants to do Sarva Dharma and Paritechya, but still he is not able to do because of the circumstances. And if he tries to make the elders at home understand saying that Krishna is the Supreme Personality, they get offended. In fact, most of the people think that Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, and Vishnu is superior to Krishna. So in that case, he'll have to worship demigods. So my question is, if a person worships demigods without any desire, keeping Krishna at the center, then what will happen to that?
Well, what you are speaking about is a very common situation in India. That is why we are spending 3 to 4 lectures only on demigods, because it is such an important subject in India. In other countries, they don't know so much what is demigods. So yes, it is a very practical problem in many Indian households where it is not a parampara of dhiras. It is simply a parampara of family tradition coming down. And whatever by chance happens to be in the family tradition, one is expected to worship according to that, irrespective of whether that is ratified by Guru, Sadhu, Shastra or not. So if the family members and relatives are willing to accept this pure sublime philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, then that is well and good. That may be in rare cases. If the family is allowing those who are practicing this to do it without interfering, that is also good. So long as somebody, they allow you to do your worship and they can do theirs, that's also alright. But if somehow there is pressure to worship demigods, then alright. One may worship demigod, give them respect. After all, they are Krishna's devotees and they are Krishna's very powerful representatives. We should never criticize demigods. We should never disrespect demigods. But very clearly we should have the understanding that they are still not the supreme. So if the circumstances are such, then you may certainly offer respects to demigods. There is no harm. But at the same time, you should know who is your ultimate worshipable object. that is Sri Krishna. There should be no compromise with that. And as far as offering respects to demigods, as a practical circumstantial situation in your situation, anybody's situation, one may do that. But at the same time, by various tricks, one must try to get everybody to become a devotee. Transcendental tricks, by divine tricks. What is the best transcendental trick? Give them Krishna's prasad. Offer whatever you cook at home to Krishna and feed everybody Krishna prasad. With the power of Krishna prasad, everyone's heart will be changed. And somehow or the other, if they can meet devotees and hear the holy name, then slowly, slowly the heart will get pure, the heart will become soft, and they will also become Krishna's devotees. Yes?
It is said that when a person dies, he is reborn. He may be reborn as an animal, human being, or any other living being. And it is also said that when a person worships ancestors, he goes to the abode of ancestors. So, I mean, do ancestors have a fixed abode?
No. This is also another common conception. When we speak of Pitriloka, we are not speaking of the abodes where the ancestors reside. We are speaking about the abode where those who worship the ancestors go. Just like if you worship the devatas, you go to the abode where the devatas reside. But here the ancestors are not in one place. The ancestors are at various places according to their karma, isn't it? But the person who worships the ancestors by offering pinda and regular oblations, then that person, because he's performing this punya, therefore he is eligible to being elevated to the Pitriloka planet. So the worshippers go to Pitriloka, not the Pitris.
What is the position of Vishnu? Is Vishnu considered to be a demigod or an expansion of the Supreme Personality himself?
Vishnu is not considered to be a demigod. He is directly the Supreme Lord. He is an expansion of the Supreme Lord. So he is certainly not a Jivatma. He is a Vishnu Tattva. There are categories of expansions of Krishna. We are called the Jiva Tattva expansions of Krishna. We are Jivatmas, tiny, insignificant parts of Krishna. But Vishnu is a portion of Krishna. He is called Vishnu Tattva. All the various avatars of Krishna, Vishnu, Narayan, Matsya, Varaha, Narsingadev, they are all Vishnu Tattvas. So Vishnu is also in that category of Vishnu Tattva. So he is not to be considered like a demigod. Although he does appear in the trinity of Vishnu, Shiva and Brahma. He does appear in that. And therefore he is considered commonly by people to be a demigod. That he is just one of the three. And all these three are sometimes considered to be equal. But they are not equal. Brahma is a Jivatma, usually. Vishnu is a Vishnu Tattva. And Shiva has his own category called Shiva Tattva. He is neither a Jiva Tattva nor he is a Vishnu Tattva. But of course that is not subject for today's discussion. But nevertheless, all these three of the Trinity have their own separate respective positions. But people in general, they confuse all three to be the same. It's all the same.
Would it be in keeping with Krishna consciousness?
Very much, no doubt. It is also, therefore, we are called Vaishnavas. It's a name, of course, we are not called Krishnavas. But ultimately, we know that Krishna is the original Vishnu. So, we can worship directly Krishna. That is still better. Because Krishna is the original Vishnu. And as far as Ram is concerned, Ram is also Vishnu Tattva. Ram is also the portion of the Supreme Lord. So, worship of Ram. Ram has got his own planet in the spiritual world. Similarly, there are so many 400 expansions of Krishna in the spiritual world, and each planet in the spiritual world has one predominating deity who is an expansion of Krishna. Pradyumna, Vasudeva, Aniruddha, Trivikram, Upendra, like that, so many of them.
Alcohol is drink by the earth people, and when that somras he drink by the sorgala people or demigods.
Yes.
The property of the substance is as it is, as we understood. Let's, sugar taste is sweet. So whether this somras is like alcohol, is it like alcohol? If it is like alcohol, then what is the difference between the earth people drinking alcohol and the somras you drink by the...
It is considered a liquor, but it is not like the liquor of this world. As I explained, the liquor of this planet is very coarse. It intoxicates. It drives a person to illusion and makes him commit all kinds of sinful and horrible activities. But the somras, instead of making you commit sinful activities, it actually frees you from sinful activities. So somras, you can go on drinking. You can go on drinking unlimitedly and no after effects, no bad reactions. So the somaras is a beverage, but it is not like an intoxicant of this world, of this earthly planet. So therefore the devatas enjoy the somaras. Yes, please.